spiritual guru of this temple, and the reason where he and I interact is that we both work together for the midday meal school program, which has how many children now? We
all India, 1.2 million.
1.2 million children get lunch at the school because of the temple, and a lot of us support this activity. It's made in a very clean surrounding and it's very nutritious, and it gives me one of the great joys to see these children go to school and they get nutritious meals. So you must try it, Lillian, one day, what it tastes like. It's beautiful. So as you know, the Hare Krishna temple also gives food, free food, to hundreds and thousands of people. Steve Jobs is known, very famous for his meal at the Hare Krishna temple when he was a young man. He used to go and eat there every day for lunch. So they have temples all over the world. The one which I like very much is in Boston. It's near the Taj Hotel. I think it's Commonwealth Avenue. It's really a pretty temple. If you have time, you must go there and see it. So Radhanath Maharaj is an American Swami, comes from Chicago. And his journey to India is written in a book called The Journey Home. And he has very kindly offered the book to you to take home and read. It's now translated in many languages. It was translated in Chinese, I was telling you, Lillian. It's in Russian, it's in Croatian, it's in all kinds of languages worldwide. And so lots and lots of people have read his story of how a young man, age 17, along with one of his friend's name is Gary, and he's actually right here behind, the two hitchhiked their way from the United States, and their whole story, their whole adventure. Gary just happened to be here, so we invited him to join us. He's a star in the book. And the two boys then came to, you know, went to Europe, and they met wonderful people. And at the border of India, when the authorities saw Radhanath Maharaj in torn clothing, they said, "You go back. We don't need more poor people in India. We don't need you to come, so I don't grant you the visa." And all those years of traveling were going to be for naught. And then Radhanath Maharaj told him that, "I promise you, I will do something for India, and you will be happy that you gave me the visa." Well, years later, he has done so much for the country, including this massive public health program across India, which serves a million children. Every day they get food, and so he has fed more people than that poor youth who came to India. So whenever Maharaji is very soft-spoken, but whenever he speaks, he touches people's hearts. I had got the YPOs here a few months ago. It was a Mumbai university, and they met him, and after that they didn't want to go back home. So, and they rated him as 9.9, which is one of the highest ratings in the YPO, because they were so touched by what he was saying. So Maharaji is going to speak to us a few words on spirituality and health. Perhaps we don't teach that at the School of Public Health always, but I thought you'd be interested in that. Maharaji?
I am very, very grateful that all of you have come to our simple ashram. And it's such a great joy to meet you. Special gratitude to Swati. Herself and Ajay, her good husband, really have been, in my heart, an incredible inspiration, an example of how people really working very, very enthusiastically within this world could be so effective in harmonizing their spirituality with their genuine concern for people's health, throughout the world. Spirituality and healthcare have combined for the well-being of humanity from the very beginning of time. From a spiritual perspective, we understand that we all have a body, a mind, and also a conscious force, which the Gita calls the Atma, which the Bible calls the soul. And to harmonize the body, the mind, and the soul, and to give proper attention and care for the health of all three of these aspects of our identity is the spiritual conception of healthcare. In the Bible it is said, what is the use if you gain the whole world but you lose your soul? And the Bhagavad Gita tells, Najayate Mriyate Vakadachit Nayakputva Bhavita Bhavu Nahanyate Hanyamane Sarire. The nature of this living force that is seeing through the eyes and hearing through the ears and tasting through the tongue and feeling through the flesh and thinking through the brain and loving through the heart, that living force, the true self, the driver within the vehicle of this body and mind, is eternal, is never born, never dies. And the nature of that Atma is that it is divine, it is part of God. And as we connect, religion comes from the Latin word religio, which means to bind back, and yoga means to reunite. In the true meaning, religion and yoga mean the same thing, to reconnect with our essence, with the living force, who we really are. And the nature of that living force is to love God, and to see every living being as a child of God. You cannot love God without feeling genuine love and compassion for every living being. My beloved Guru Srila Prabhupada used to say, true religion is not about being a Hindu or a Muslim or a Jew or a Jain or a Sikh or a Christian or a Parsi. It's about learning how to love God and learning to see the spiritual essence in all living beings and to love them. Or as it is said, to love the diseased, but maybe not love the disease. If my mother has a terrible disease, I hate the disease, but I love her. And to the degree I love her, to that degree I'll really care, and I'll really do everything and anything I can to heal her. So spirituality, in its true sense, not in a ritualistic sectarian idea, but in its universal spiritual essence, brings about true compassion. Seeing life as our sacred brotherhood and sisterhood. There are so many reasons for disease today, which all of you know much better than me. But a few of them, because we have a hospital, and I get sick myself, so I always hear these things. Stress, depression, anxiety is a serious cause of mental disease and also physical disease. Heart disease, cancer, a lot of it comes from such a stressful, anxiety-filled life. Spirituality is, in essence, to build a strong inner foundation of fulfillment. It is said in the Bible, if you build your house on shifting sand, then if a wind comes, a heavy storm, it will collapse. But if you build your house on solid rock, then any storm may come, but the house will stand. So the fulfillment of our life is very much based on the inner foundation. Real happiness, real fulfillment, real peace has to be found within ourselves. It can't be found outside of ourselves unless we have it within. I know one lady, dear god sister of mine, her name was Willow, or also Kunti. She was a mother of two children. She was dying of a terrible condition of cancer. She was paralyzed from the waist down. She was emaciated thin, and she was going to die any day. In fact, she was supposed to die within a month. And I said goodbye to her because I had to come back to India. She was living in America. And when I came back 6 months later, she was still there. But I remember she was just laying in her bed, propped up, and someone had given her a computer because she couldn't hold a book anymore. She was so weak. So she was just with her little, very frail yellow fingers. She was like little twigs. She just turned the pages. And she was in such happiness. Tears were flooding her eyes. She said, I've never heard God's words and our guru's words more clearly than now. It's like every word of these holy books is speaking to me right to the heart, so intimately, so personally. She said, I'm so happy. I would not trade my position for anyone else in the entire world. She's going to die any day. She can't eat. She could hardly sleep. She's in so much pain. But she had inner fulfillment from a life of devotion. She had so much love, and actually, when she found out the people living nearby were not getting proper food, she would go in a wheelchair to a kitchen and cook for everybody, for about 20, 30 people every day, about a 5-course lunch. And nobody wanted to eat anywhere else because she put so much love and so much devotion. Even though she was in such a state, she was simply thinking about how I could make other people happy. An inner foundation of love, an inner foundation of fulfillment. When we find that within ourselves, then things of this world don't get us so stressful. There's a beautiful verse in the Gita, Vishayavanivartante niraharasya dehina rasa varajam rasopyasya param drishtvani vartate. That all the storms of this world can easily be overcome if we experience a higher fulfillment within ourselves. And this world is built in such a way, especially in the cities, there is so much stress and so much competition and so much anxiety. And one of the greatest causes of suffering, according to the World Health Organization, is depression. A mental disease, which causes as much or more suffering than any physical disease. Spirituality, in its true sense, brings us an experience of inner fulfillment and peace and love. And that's so important today. Toxins are a very big cause of health problems. From a spiritual perspective, we understand that this body is the sacred property of God. And it should be honored and it should be cared for accordingly. And the world we see as Mother Earth. Real spirituality in tradition very much harmonizes our own life with our respect and honor of nature, God's gifts, to not exploit due to greed and replenish with toxins and waste. A true spiritual consciousness is looking for sustainable ways of creating a natural lifestyle by honoring the environment. Another cause of disease is a reckless lifestyle. Spirituality is meant to cultivate within our hearts values, universal values, morals, and ethics, which is so important for preventing disease. And another big cause of suffering in this world is indifference. People who are healthy, do they really care about people who have disease? People who are wealthy, do they really care about those that are poor? People that are happy, do they really care about people who are suffering? A universal principle of spirituality is compassion. Compassion to all beings. When we see who we are within, when we understand that, we understand our relationship with all others. Recently, I was at a conference in Beverly Hills. It was the Mike Milken Global Conference, and they asked me to give a morning meditation. There was about 4,000 or 5,000 people, very, very influential people from all over the world. And it was interesting that the people who really coordinated that conference, one of their aims were to get people from the very high brackets of society to really feel the responsibility to show compassion to people in this world. And to invest. There was one lady who was speaking, I forgot her name, but she was the CEO and president of a major pharmaceutical company in America. And she had developed so many aids and cures to cancer. And somebody asked her a question, you know, how you deal with all the investors and everything. She said, from my heart, I only have one concern. There are people suffering, and we have the means through our research to help them. And everything is centered around there. And if I could communicate that to the investors, then I'm successful. Afterward on this panel, they asked the next person to speak. Mike Milken was the moderator. Steve Wynn was there, he's the owner of many casinos and hotels. And interestingly, in his little talk, he quoted Mahatma Gandhi 4 times. And there was also, what is his name? He was the manager for the New York Yankees. From the past. He was the best one, I think. But they told a little about him. For 10 years, the New York Yankees did not enter into one playoff. 10 years. They were really bad. So the manager hired this, the owner of the team hired this new person. And the media smashed him
They consider him totally unqualified. The televisions, the newspapers, the radios, the magazines. But anyways, he entered. And the next 10 years, they were in 6 World Series and they won 4. So they asked him, what was the most fulfilling accomplishment of your life? He said, compared to this lady next to me who cures people of cancers, I've done nothing. Mike Milken said, there are 2,000 people in here, in this room. At least half of us are New York Yankee fans. We think you have accomplished something. Can you tell us what is the greatest fulfillment of your life? He said, becoming a Hall of Fame baseball player, being rated one of the top baseball managers in all of history, that is not really what I consider a real fulfilling accomplishment. He said, when I was a young boy, I lived in a house that was so abusive. His name was Joe Torre. He said, I was so miserable as a little boy. I got no love. I got no appreciation. I got no feeling of acknowledgement. I was always yelled at and chastised and punished. And I was always hearing arguments and fighting. I think his father was an alcoholic. He said, it was so intolerable, I would just run out of the house and play baseball. And I would take all my anguish and anxiety out in playing baseball. And it's the only place I could forget my miseries and feel happiness is when I played baseball. And because I put my whole life into it, I later on became a Hall of Fame baseball player in the major leagues and became a big manager. But if you want to ask if I've done anything good in my life, he said, I started an organization to help children from abusive homes. We've set it up in several of the inner city schools of New York, where there's counselors and there's psychologists and there's psychologists and there's people who are engaging them in meaningful activities and making them feel that they're valued and that they're loved. And we see these people getting what I didn't get. He said, that is the one truly meaningful, fulfilling accomplishment in my life. He got a standing ovation. It's interesting how compassion, more than anything else, touches people's hearts. And then he said something else that really interested me. He said, this whole organization, it was my wife's idea, and she's in charge. I'm just helping her. So that was pretty humble of him to say that. And as a Swami sitting there amongst all these people, I remember thinking, this is a spiritual principle, to serve, to give, without selfish expectations. It's a expression of love. And it's that love that touches our heart, and it's that love that will touch others' hearts. And when we have healthy hearts, loving hearts, I remember Mother Teresa told me personally, the problem in this world is not hunger of the belly, it's hunger of the hearts. We need to know, to learn how to love God, and in loving God, learning all others. Just like if you water the root of the tree, that nourishment goes to every leaf, branch, and flower. If we learn to find that love within ourselves for the Lord, it naturally extends to all living beings. and helps us to live with values, to honor the environment and the earth, to live with responsibility, and to have that inner foundation of fulfillment where we could be instruments of peace, instruments of compassion. That's what spirituality is for. That's the essence that I found in my life of all religion. Instead of fighting over differences of ritual, of differences of explanation, we need to come together. Because there's a need. There's a need for the health of humanity and the health of our planet. Thank you very much. Yes, sir.
When you meet with the youth today, how is it? How do you communicate that message? When you meet with the young people here and you talk to them, what is it that causes them to believe that's a good message?
Can you speak into the microphone?
Yes.
Just the last part I did.
Right. What is it that you find resonates well with youth today here in the city that causes them to feel good about that message?
One thing that resonates with people is our living example. Young people are often tired of listening to older people talk. I'm from America. I grew up as a teenager in the 1960s, along with my dear friend Gary. And that was the time of the counterculture. And we were very much a part of the counterculture. It was a time when the youth were rebelling against the older generation. We had a mantra, a slogan, never trust anyone over 30. Do you remember that? Now I'm 61, so I never thought that would happen, but it happens. Why? Because we were hearing about freedom for everyone. We'd pledge allegiance to the flag in those days, to the United States of America, one nation with liberty and justice for all. But in the early 1960s, if you were born with black skin, African American, it was practically 95% chance that you were going to be born, live, and die in the ghetto. There was practically no way out. Our Constitution said one thing, but were they free? Did they have liberty? At one time they were slaves, and now they may not be slaves, but they did not have equal rights. And I saw that with other minorities too. And when I was going to be 18, I could be drafted to send to Vietnam, a war which I really didn't believe in. But yet, either I go to war and kill, or go to jail. Those were the two choices we had. Unless we could somehow or other maneuver our way around it. Is this liberty? Is this freedom? I believe in liberty. I believe in freedom. But we have to see it. And I think youth are always like that. They're idealistic. They see more than they hear. And if they feel that we're genuine about what they say in these days, walking your talk, then they take you seriously. And if we could somehow or other connect with them, what they're going through right now. This was a problem in my own youth. I was suffering anxiety and despondency over situations of the society, and my parents just couldn't understand it. They were wonderful, loving, beautiful people, and ultimately their example helped me to whatever good is in me today was very much on the foundation of what they gave me. But we have to really understand what the young people are going through. And people respond to love. People respond to the message of compassion. People respond to universal principles. And I see here in this temple, Saturday night, this Saturday, we have it once a month, we have a program for college students. And we have one for ladies and one for men because our temple's not so big. And we usually get about 1,500 college students that come. And they are so excited. All of them, every single one of them was running away from their tradition and running toward immorality. But just by hearing this message of peace, of love, of devotion, and seeing how it's practical in life, seeing how it's scientific in life, they're so enthusiastic. Their parents were trying to tell them to go to a temple, but they would never come. And now their parents are telling them, you shouldn't go soon. You shouldn't go so much. And we usually have about 400 or 500 ladies that come when we... So the youth is really the future of the world. We have to show them something without hypocrisy, real care. Health care is so important. Physical, mental, spiritual. Does that answer your question?
Thank you.
That's my experience.